Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where educators go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top leaders across the globe. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Danny Sunshine Bauer.
This is episode number 142 with Jamie Poskin. Hi there, my name is Danny Sunshine Bauer. I'm a former classroom teacher and school administrator turned life and leadership coach. Also the host of this podcast where each week I share my conversation with top leaders across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show with Jamie Poskin, we explore a number of interesting topics like the origin story of his company, TeachFX, how TeachFX helps teachers reflect, why we should be men and women for others, and what Jamie has learned from bad hires. And I'm going to tell you this right now. Listen to this whole episode because we dive deep into interviewing. And I think Jamie and I uncover some incredible value for you that could probably even transform how you conduct interviews. So check it out. You know, send me an email. Let me know what you think. Daniel at betterleadersbetterschools.com. And thanks for spending some time with me listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. But before we jump into the episode, I'd like to take some time to thank our lovely show sponsors. I'd like to share an incredible free resource for the better leaders that listen to this podcast. It's the top 10 fundraising ideas for 2018, and that's available at schoolzonepodcast.com. And just like the title says, you'll get the top 10 school fundraising ideas for 2018 when you download it at schoolzonepodcast.com. Hey there, better leaders. I am here today with the founder of TeachFX, Jamie Poskin. TeachFX uses machine learning to superpower teachers' work by providing them with automated feedback on the discussions that are happening in their classrooms. Like I said, TeachFX was founded by Jamie Poskin, and he's a former English and math teacher, tech entrepreneur, experimental theater director, and a recent graduate of Stanford's MBA and Master's in Education programs. Jamie, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So I'd like to ask what inspired people to pursue their career in education, but I want to start with the origin story of TeachFX. This sounds like an incredible new technology that classroom teachers and administrators can leverage. So what is the origin story of TeachFX?
Yeah, sure. So kind of two origin stories. One came back when I was teaching. So, you know, I was fresh out of undergrad and, you know, going into the classroom, teaching English and math. And I really didn't get a lot of support, a lot of feedback when I was teaching. Like, in fact, my English classes were never observed by another adult my entire teaching career.
Whoa.
Yeah.
How long was that?
It was only 2 years. I sort of started a 2-year volunteer teaching program at this high school in Harlem. Mm-hmm. And, but yeah, for that 2-year period, you know, the sections of English that I taught, none of them were ever seen by another adult in the building. So,
oh my gosh.
And that kind of stuck with me, that experience. And, you know, then flash forward 10 years later, I'm in business school and ed school at Stanford, and I'm doing this class called Startup Garage, where you talk to customers about ideas for products you have. And I had mocked up something that had to do with video and teachers. And it was a totally different type of product. And I was talking to a principal in Chicago, and he suggested the idea. He's like, you know, the problem with this video, you know, video is great, but you were a teacher. Like, do you ever watch the video? When do you have time to watch the video? And he says, you know, you're at Stanford. You guys got all these, you know, fancy computers and stuff like that. You can run stuff, do high tech stuff. Can't you just like run the video through some algorithm or something and tell me all the important things that I want to know about the class so that I can just get the takeaways without having to spend an hour watching my video? And I was like, well, what sort of things would you want to know? And he starts listing off all these things. And I'm like, right, yeah, these are the things that as an educator, you'd want to know, you know, what my teacher talk is versus how much my students are talking, whether I'm asking open-ended questions, whether I'm calling on boys or girls more, who's getting more airtime, what's my wait time like? So all these questions he starts listing off. And I'm like, yeah, of course. Like, actually, I am at Stanford. And actually, I probably could find an engineer that could work on this stuff with me and make this a reality. So yeah, after that conversation, kind of a light went off in my head. It kind of went back to my experience of not having a lot of feedback, or certainly not having regular feedback. And kind of the marriage of those two experiences was really, I think, the origin of TeachFX. Yeah.
You know what I want to pull out for the listeners there? Number one, that's crazy. You know, that you didn't get any feedback. And I was curious, you know, in the length, 2 years, that's quite a long time to have never have an adult, another adult, observe or provide any type of feedback. That certainly wasn't, you know, the culture of any school that I ran. But I'll tell you, guess what? That's not too different from what I experienced. I remember teaching second job.
Yeah.
And I won't say the school, but there was a year I didn't get observed, a whole year. By the principal was my supervisor, and I showed up at her office at the end of the year, and, you know, thankfully I was a good teacher. She gave me my quote unquote evaluation. I still signed it, right? It was a great evaluation,
yeah, yeah.
But she never stopped by once. So that's insane. Another thing I want listeners to really hear about Jamie's story, he was talking to people, and in this case, it was a Chicago principal who basically really helped start off the idea for TeachFX. And a lot of times we do this work toiling in isolation all by ourselves. What's the best thing we can do for the school, right? But if we just simply ask or share some of the ideas with a trusted group of confidants and then have enough wherewithal to shut up, listen to the feedback, you might get your next brilliant idea just from the awesome people that you connect with.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it was great talk. I mean, you know, my whole philosophy with this company from the beginning is to let the educators that I talk to drive what the product becomes, because it's a product that's meant to help the teacher. It's meant to be like a little daily dose of feedback that you can get. So yeah, I mean, I've had probably somewhere around 400 conversations with teachers and principals, assistant principals at this point. And it's been, I mean, all of the ideas for the product have come from educators.
I'm curious, what caused the switch then from education and then pursuing MBA at Stanford?
Well, I had like a long and winding road in between. You know, I did this, you know, like I said, I started this volunteer program. So I was working for free. The whole idea was like to live simply, live in community with other volunteer teachers. So that program now has like 30 something alumni in Harlem who teach at this school. And the school was, you know, the school is actually led by a fantastic, fantastic principal. I arrived in the second year of the school when everything was just a little bit crazy still. And so my experience was definitely not ideal with, you know, not being observed, my English classes not being observed. But that school is doing great things now and has and was then too. But yeah, so after I finished that sort of 2 year program that I helped, that I started, I kind of went on, I did some kind of web tech entrepreneurship work. And then I actually got into the arts for a while. I was a theater director for, gosh, 6-7 years. Mm. But really, you know, education has always been at the core of what I wanted to do. When I graduated undergrad, you know, in 2006, there was like no job I wanted to do. I was like, all these jobs, like they're not, you know, impacting the world in the way that I care about. And so I think after kind of my long and winding road, I thought, you know, I want to get back into something where I can make a big impact. I didn't really know exactly how, but I knew I wanted to have to do with education. And I was lucky enough to get into the GSB at Stanford and the GSC at Stanford. And yeah, just kind of was open to whatever happened. I've always been interested in entrepreneurship. So yeah, when that principal in Chicago suggested that idea, it really, you know, kind of catapulted me into what I'm doing now.
I'm also curious, with your experience in business, entrepreneurship, and then your experience in theater, mm-hmm. what do you think those maybe main skills or just big aha moments you've had in both of those industries, how could they translate to education since you've had your foot in that as well?
You know, theater and education, there's a ton of overlap. You know, and you know, I'll try to tie it all together. There's this whole idea that we have in experimental arts. I was an experimental theater director where you use like the scientific method and you're always rapid prototyping. You know, you say, okay, I think this might work for this scene or for this, you know, part of this play. And you know, let's try it out with all the variables in place. It's a very unusual way of working, but you know, you do it like it would be in front of an audience and you try that 5-second moment out and maybe it works, maybe it doesn't, but the whole process is hypothesis driven. And, you know, you might do 200 experiments in one 8-hour rehearsal and maybe three of them work. So you spent the day and you might have come up with 25 seconds of the production that actually works. Well, I think that approach, that sort of hypothesis driven approach, really ties into how teachers work, right? Like we come in, you know, you try something, you see how the class responds, and then you adjust the next day. I mean, that kind of iterative approach, I think, I mean, that's how I approached my classes when I taught. And then, you know, coming to business school or working in this kind of other field, you know, guess what? They teach the same darn thing, you know? They teach the same thing, which is, you know, try out your ideas, you know, before you go build a big product, like go talk to customers, like do a really low resolution version of what, you know, what you think you want to do. And, you know, before you devote a lot of resources to it, like do a small test first, you know? So I think that idea kind of has translated across those three different dimensions. And it's how, you know, it's how I started with TeachFX. Like first I just built little screenshots of this is what the report that you would get would look like. Right. And I just drew those, you know? And so that was like a great way to see if this was something that teachers would actually find valuable and principals would actually want for their teachers to be using. So I did that, you know, hundreds of iterations of that before I wrote one line of code. And then, you know, once I sort of felt like, yeah, there's something here, like this is real, like people want this thing, you know, then I said, okay, well, now the next test is, can we make this happen technically? Are the machine learning algorithms out there? Can we develop one that can, for example, our very first product is, you know, it's tracking teacher talk versus student talk. Well, that's kind of a hard thing to do. You have like, mm-hmm. we're trying to do it with just the microphone on your cell phone or your laptop. Like, it's a pretty tricky problem, right? And so the next question was like, well, can we do that? Well, instead of trying to build a full product, I said, let's just try to build that core engine and see if we can get some good results. And so then once we kind of check that box, now we've been kind of putting it all together and, you know, we're releasing, you know, we released this fall.
That's got to be incredibly exciting. I know you've been working with beta testers or beta group.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious, you know, what have they experienced as like, I guess, the most valuable part of TeachFX? I hear definitely in terms of talk time, right? We want to hear the kids working a lot more than the teacher, right? And especially doing the right. heavy lifting, the cognitive work in the classroom. But sometimes we hijack that as the adult in the classroom. But what have they seen as the most valuable aspects of TeachFX so far?
I think one of the biggest things is simply being reflective on your teaching on a daily basis is huge. You know, just to sit down and say, okay, like I'm now going to think about how that went in some kind of structured way. I think that's some of the feedback I got. It's just that process alone is big. The first product, like with these beta testers that we tested, is this teacher talk, student talk thing. And that kind of comes from, you know, number one, what principals and teachers said they wanted. And two, from a lot of the research. Like I know Rachel Lotan's research has sort of shown that the more students speak in class, the more they learn, and that it's a causal relationship. Right? It's not just like the smart kids talk more, right? And so we kind of wanted to leverage this sort of simple idea of, all right, if there's one, let's track one metric, student speech percentage in a classroom and teacher speech. So we got both, right? And I think the way that the teachers in the beta group really found it valuable was kind of in a couple different ways. One is to just be able to have this percentage that you can strive for. So like I might set a goal, like one of the teachers in the group had a goal of 60% student speech, 40% him. And he'd get his report every day. And some days he'd be right around that. And other days he'd be, you know, 60-40 in the other direction where it's 60% him and 40% his students. Mm-hmm. And so it was just a nice way to kind of keep tabs on, like kind of like a Fitbit or like Strava does for athletes or just people who are exercising. You know, it's a way to kind of have a goal that you're striving for, and then you get feedback like on a daily basis on how you're doing toward that goal. Then the second way that people really used it a lot was, you know, what we do is we kind of give you a chart of your full class, and we show you like when, who is talking when, right? So it's like a little bar chart. And that can be super helpful because, you know, you might know that you're starting off class with like an introduction or some kind of direct instruction. But maybe that goes a little longer than you planned. And so you look at it and you go, well, I had put 8 minutes in my lesson plan for the intro. And, you know, I remember going over, but I didn't realize I went 7 minutes over. You know what I mean? And right. that 15-minute intro. Like that's a long time, you know. Or you can look at little sections of the discussion and you can kind of see, you know, how often are you coming in? Like one of the things that we'll do actually very soon, we already have the algorithm to do this, is kind of give teachers a ping pong versus volleyball score so that they can see like, are they coming in every time a student speaks or are students kind of handing off the discussion to each other? Like in the sort of, you know, quote unquote volleyball style discussion where, you know, students are responding to each other before the teacher comes in at each time. So like you can kind of see that already in the chart, right? Like if you are looking at the chart and you see like a lot of teacher speech in between little slices of student speech, that's a very different type of classroom discussion or dialogue than if you see like big blocks of the student. And like sometimes teachers would do like a quick post-mortem. Like I remember one of the teachers, he was running a great discussion and was, you know, it had students really involved. And then all of a sudden there was this big block of like 12 minutes of him, you know, going on and on. Yeah, yeah. And he was like, it was great to be able to just go there and say, well, what happened here? Like I wasn't planning on doing a 12 minute lecture in the middle of my class.
And he was feeling it.
He was feeling it. Yeah. And of course, like, of course he looks at it and he goes, you know, shoot, I was recapping a lecture that I did last week. I could have easily had a student recap that, those ideas. Like it was appropriate. He didn't feel like he made the wrong move in terms of, you know, the content. That content was nice to bring up at that point in the class, but he didn't need to be driving it because he had already done a lecture on that the week before. So, and I think you said it right at the beginning of your question, like, I struggled with this tremendously as a teacher, right? I love literature. When I was teaching English, I would have all these points that I wanted to bring out, like we're, you know, if we're reading Lord of the Flies or something. I had all these ideas that I wanted to kind of cover, quote unquote, you know? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you have the discussion and it's going well, and maybe you have 3 points that you want to kind of draw out of this chapter. And like maybe students have made one of those points, and then you're like looking at the clock, you're like, crud, I got 10 minutes. And then all of a sudden, me, in my case, like I'd be doing all the heavy lifting. Like I'd be doing the analysis of the passage, and the students would just be like listening to me do it. And I think I fell into that trap a lot as a teacher. And I needed a tool like this to get me to, you know, kind of shut up and let the kids do the work, you know, more than, I mean, you know, I think I did a decent job at that in general, but gosh, it really would have been great to have something that kind of kept me honest about that on a day-to-day basis.
Thank you so much for sharing how people have experienced the value. You know, I'm sure I'm excited about what you're doing. So I hope, you know, listeners are as well. I love the points. So just want to reiterate for listeners, like the goal, right? So the 60-40 mm-hmm. that you talked about, because you just, you're getting that continuous feedback. I have a productivity course, and one of the greatest levers that we pull is that there's a daily score that we keep track of,
yeah,
so that we absolutely accomplish whatever that big goal is. But you have to keep track daily that you're going towards it, because that is what gets you there,
totally. Right?
Lead versus lag indicators. Yeah. Love it. And then I used to draw for teachers. I found this so interesting and they found it very helpful. I would literally map out the class where all the kids were sitting, and I would draw arrows, Jamie, of when a kid would talk and when a teacher would talk. And I would try to also capture where the teacher moved around the room as well. You know, just to give a teacher a sense, okay, you're interacting with these kids all the time. You completely ignored 1/3 of your classroom, right?
Right.
And this
right.
is some of what it sounds like TeachFX does.
Exactly.
That's yeah. incredible. Yeah. I wish I had that. I'm glad this is out now, because this is, I needed that. I don't know if there's any way for you to incorporate sort of like a heat map of where.
That's definitely something that we're working on. I mean, and I think we have a really good strategy to, because that's a very difficult technical challenge to get like individual students. But I think we have a really good.
Hey, I'm just an idea man, right?
Yeah, no, but it's like we have the groundwork kind of laid for making that happen. Because I really think, I mean, this is kind of a little bit longer term, like a year plus out. Mm-hmm. But really the goal for us is eventually we want to be able to show a teacher like, hey, here's the minutes that each of your students spoke this week. I mean, I was reading somewhere recently that the average student in high school in America speaks less than 2 minutes.
Oh my gosh.
Something like that. It blew my mind.
Yeah.
And so to be able to see like, hey, this is how much each student was speaking this week. You can use that to start conversations with your kids to say like, hey, like, here's, you know, you, here's how you fall in the distribution of the class. Like, I'd love to get you more, you know, involved, more engaged, more participatory. Yeah. So that's definitely where we want to go. And then the next thing we can do with that is after you get the individual student speech, you can kind of slice and dice your class based on whatever groups you want to look at. So if as a teacher, you want to see in a private and non-judgmental way, like, hey, am I calling on certain ethnic groups more than others?
Exactly.
How am I doing with my ELL kids versus my non-ELL kids? Like, how am I doing with my, with my SPED kids versus my, you know, like, so you can kind of slice and dice your class however, in whatever groups you want, and sort of see like who's getting more airtime, who are you calling on more, and that kind of stuff to really, you know, the tricky thing with fighting implicit bias is that it's really hard for, I think, human beings in general to like get feedback around that. right? If I come up to you and say, hey, I observed one of your classes and, you know, you really called on the boys a lot more than the girls. You say, well, that was, you know, that was an unusual class. Like they just happened to da 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 or whatever. You're going to have, people tend to become defensive in that scenario. So the idea with TeachFX is that we can do this in a regular way that's data driven. And it's like no one's sitting here calling you, you know, names, right? Like no one's ascribing any kind of malintent to you. This is a machine that is simply giving you the facts on the ground in a private way so that you don't have to feel like judged and defensive as a teacher. And, you know, you're more empowered, I think, to make change when that's the way the feedback is delivered.
Well, it's a great way too for leaders to multiply themselves. Because even if you have a team of instructional coaches, they can't be in classes all the time, 100%. And so the teacher that does get defensive because they care about their craft, they want to be great.
Yeah.
And you show them some objective data and they're like, oh, well, this is an outlier. You know, this, I was off that day or whatever. This type of technology allows you to build some longitudinal data that again is objective. And it's really important as a school leader not to add the meaning for the teacher. They need to uncover it and make the aha moments themselves. But I think, you know, I want to say it was a social studies class. I don't remember if you said that or not. But when the teacher went on the 12-minute lecture and he realized that, man, this would have been powerful since I gave the lecture yesterday for a kid to have reviewed. That kind of reflection, those kind of aha moments are absolute teacher development gold.
Exactly.
And you've developed a tool, Jamie, that provides that data. I'm really excited about what you're doing.
Thanks, man. I am too. Yeah, it's still early days for us, you know.
Sure.
But yeah, we're really excited about the potential to be exactly what you said, like a force multiplier for educators. I mean, you know, and school leaders. I mean, you know, I talked with my old principal about this product, and I think, you know, a lot of what we're trying to do is centered around this hypothesis that, like, yeah, principals and assistant principals would love to be in the classroom, you know, working with their teachers all the time. Like that's kind of why they often got into the role. Like that's what they care about the most. But the demands of running a school are just super intense. Like my fiance works in school leadership and, you know, it's like operational, like so much operational stuff has to happen to make a school run. And it's hard to find the time to really be that like teacher leader that I think most school admins want to be. And so this is just a way to like make your work last longer, to be more effective, to be more impactful on the teacher. Because if you sit with the teacher at the beginning of the year and say, hey, you know, here's some strategies I want you to work on, et cetera, and hey, I also want you to use this tool every day to sort of see how this is impacting your teaching on a daily basis. Well, it's such a great way to start the conversation when you meet again 3 months or 6 months or however often you're able to get in there.
This podcast is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators and podcasts by educators. Listen to all the great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. That's edupodcastnetwork.com. The other interesting thing too, I want to give you two ideas. You know, you've probably already thought of this too, but I want to at least share them. One, you know, double your price because this is such a valuable tool. And the other implication that I'm thinking of, listen, teacher evaluation, I think it's swung too far on the other side. It used to be just a very minimalist checklist and it didn't provide any feedback. Now administrators are trained to literally script everything that happens in a class.
Right.
What do teachers say and do? What do kids say and do? You're aware of that.
Yeah.
But this could be a huge helpful tool there as well for evaluations potentially. I don't know. But the other thing I was thinking about, the teacher reflected, wow, I just talked for 12 minutes. My kids could have talked.
Yeah.
What about the application for the school leader running different types of meetings with parents, with his staff, with the leadership team, and giving back data that, listen, I was doing all the talking, all the presenting. I didn't solicit any type of feedback. I didn't ask any questions to the community. You know what I mean? It was just like a dog and pony show. I think that might be an interesting application for TeachFX too.
Absolutely. And we've actually seen, so, you know, often that's because principals get super excited about this when I talk with them about it. And so that's often what you just described is exactly how we start. So I'll say, well, why don't you use TeachFX in your next meeting with your teachers? And you can track your own, you know, principal speech against your teachers. And that's like a way to model how a teacher would use the product in their own classroom. Right. And because another thing that's super important about this whole thing for me is this is always going to be a teacher tool. The teacher is going to own their data. And like, we'll never require a teacher to share their data with anyone. Obviously, you know, they can if they want to. We have the ability for them to share with their admin, you know, and that's, and I think in the ideal use case, that is how it's used. But, you know, never want to force a teacher to do that. And I think principals are really kind of, they understand that, that this is a tool that needs to be like owned by the teacher. So what you described is kind of a great way for a principal to say like, hey, if you guys want to use this thing, like I'm using it. Right. And it's a great way to kind of prototype it in your school before you kind of commit to having, you know, 25 teachers using it every day.
So, Jamie, as a founder of a startup, how would you describe your leadership style and how did you develop it?
You know, for me, it's really servant leadership has always been kind of my mentality. I see myself as being on here on this earth to help make others all they're meant to be. I'm Jewish, but I went to a Jesuit high school and taught at a Jesuit high school. And, you know, there's this idea of being men and women for others, you know, and I think that's really powerful. And that's kind of how I live my life. So, you know, I love developing people. I love, like I said, helping people grow and learn. I mean, as educators, I think that's what makes life meaningful. Like learning is what, in all its different forms, not just in the classroom, but like learning is what keeps us interested in life and keeps us engaged with like the world around us. And so, you know, learning and growing, you know, any way that I can facilitate that as a leader, like that's my goal. And I mean, I think that's kind of how I approach it, you know, very much like I'm here to support you and to make you the best, most productive. Like I want you to kick butt in whatever your role is. And I'm just like, I'm your assistant for that.
Love it. That's such that, you know, for me, I think our foundational beliefs around leadership sound very similar in that sense. So I really appreciate hearing that. We talked about your leadership style just a second ago. I love hearing about worst leadership mistakes and what you learned from it.
Oh my gosh. Well, bad hires, I think, has always been my, those are the, it's like, you know, so it's like you want to, especially when you have a philosophy like mine, which is like to develop people. You know, when you do bring on that person who's just like not a fit or who's not there for the right reasons. I mean, you know, to me, it's just like if you're doing the right things for the right reasons, you know, it's just like everything else you can figure out. And so when you have somebody who's maybe that's not their attitude, gosh, that really makes it challenging. So I'd say, you know, the biggest mistakes I've made is in hiring. And, you know, it's simple stuff. Like one of the worst hires I made, you know, is somebody that I just didn't call their references. Like they just seemed so great. And I was hiring with another person was like, we were both hiring together. And I kind of thought that my colleague would call the references. I think she kind of thought I would, and neither of us did. We ended up offering this person the job and it was just a nightmare. And that's such a simple thing to talk to someone's references. So what I've learned is like hire real slow. And don't be afraid to tell someone, hey, it's not working out. Because if you're going to really invest in people the way that I want to invest in people, you want to make sure it's a good fit for both of those people. Like if my goal is to help people learn and grow and be like their assistant, and you don't want to have someone on your team who doesn't like that, who doesn't want to learn and grow, or if they do want to learn and grow, they don't want you being their assistant or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, everyone's different. So, and everyone has different styles. So I think the biggest thing I've learned is be really, really slow and careful about bringing people onto the team, and to do it in a kind of, I kind of do it in a porous way where I can let people come on like a small commitment. Like, hey, you know, I'm really interested in what you're doing, TeachFX. I was like, great. Do you want to work on this little project with me? Mm-hmm. You know, get a feel for each other. Like before we even do an interview process, I'll be like, hey, you know, I'm working on this, this email to teachers. Like, do you want to have a look at it and like, tell me what you think? And then it's like, just to see how you work together and be really thoughtful about making sure you find the right people. And then, yeah, like setting some hard things. Like, look, in 3 months, let's have a real conversation about whether it's working or not. And maybe it's not, and that's fine. Like there's no, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that either of us did anything wrong. So that's kind of been my biggest learning. I think early on, you know, for most of my career, I think, you know, it's a scary thing to do, to say like, oh, I should let somebody go. You know, that's, it always feels so harsh. But I think when you can make those kind of decisions quick and make the bringing on the hiring decisions slow, you know, it's a better dynamic overall.
So I want to get to sort of like this micro projects thing in a second, but hiring is like a really interesting topic to me. So yeah. I want to stay here for a moment.
Okay, sure.
I love the idea of hiring slow, which I think is very challenging for the listeners. They're thinking, I need a teacher, you know, in the school. So listener, you got to put that to the side, like hiring slow. You got to find the right person that is a cultural fit aligned with your mission, vision, and values. And so obviously I'm sure now, right, you don't make an assumption with the co-founder and like, okay, shoot, one of us, who's calling references this time? Remember that, you know, horror story, and you take care of that. But have you adapted, have you changed anything else about the interview and hiring process also to make it a little bit better?
Well, yeah. I mean, one huge thing I do now with TeachFX that I didn't do in previous jobs is like, I have a really explicit conversation with whoever I'm interviewing about values, because, you know, so much of the disagreements that you have in the workplace are about tactical stuff. Like, hey, are we, you know, I think we should use this strategy, or I think we should use that strategy. And it's just like, a lot of times they're empirical questions. Like, I think this will work better, you think that will work better, and we're arguing about it. And those kind of arguments, I think, are good arguments to have. Like, I like a workplace where there's a lot of like productive conflict. But if you guys aren't, you know, if you and your team aren't aligned on values, that's, you can't, I mean, there's no, you know, that's not a healthy conflict. Mm-hmm. And so now, like, when, you know, the third round of our interview process is like, I just sit down and I ask a lot of these questions, like, hey, if, you know, in your life, not just in your workplace, like, if you had to pick three words that are like your top three values, what are they and why? And like questions like that, that are real, you know, ooey gooey, touchy feely kind of questions. But I found it to be like so helpful in really getting a sense of people, and also communicating like, hey, this is what I care about as a leader. And they get that signal from me, right? So I think it just helps with the fit process. So that's like one big thing that I've changed. The other thing I'd say I changed is like, I alluded to this, but just more and more like work sample testing. So, you know, if you're a school leader, like, obviously you watch someone teach like a lesson, you know, as a part of the interview process, but to do as much of that kind of stuff as possible to really get a sense of someone's work is another thing that I've tried to incorporate more and more. Like when I hire an engineer, like, you know, I like to, so sometimes you have people do like a coding test where you give them something and then they work on it and they send you the results. Well, I like to do that like with them next to me. And I do it on real stuff where I say, okay, like, that's cool, I like what you mocked up there, but can you make it so all the buttons are on the left side, and then maybe make it so this, and then like see how they respond to that, you know, and see if they like push back and say, well, why the left side? Like, is that really going to be the best UX? And like, I like it when they ask questions like that. So then it's, you get a real sense of how someone works. And then I think the last thing is just hiring through the windshield instead of through the rear view mirror, right? So at this point, I'm interviewing people and talking to people for TeachFX that like, I probably won't bring on to the team for 6-8 months, but I want to start those conversations early, because the day that I need that person, it's like, I'm going to need them yesterday. You know what I mean? And so I don't think that's kind of a normal practice that I had before now, because it just takes so much time to go through that kind of hiring process. But, yep. I'm new to that. I'm new to just doing it this way, but so far it's paid off, just in terms of like, wow, like, I feel like I have a nice pipeline of great candidates that when we do need to hire our first product manager, like, I feel I'm on the ball for that. I already have great people that I can call on for those roles.
Better leaders, rewind and listen to everything Jamie just shared about interviewing, because that was an interview masterclass that he learned from the mistakes made, which is how we all learn. But that was some incredible content right there. Curious question, you know, you talked about ooey gooey values, right? But it's an important question.
Yeah,
I just liked how you phrased it, honestly. But we need to be very clear on who we are, where we're going. That's our vision, how we operate missionally, and how that gets lived out through our core values. And so you ask people to describe themselves, right, with three words, let's say. And so how do you, though, measure for authenticity? You know what I mean, Jamie? Because like, it's like, what's your worst mistake? I'm just such a hard worker. You know, I never go home. You know, I have so much passion for my work. But how do you measure for that? They're telling you the truth. I'm curious.
Well, there's no right answer to what are your, I mean, if I ask you, like, give me three words or five words that are your top five or three or four, or however many values. Like, there's no wrong answer to that question. I mean, unless someone says, you know, I don't know, something horrible. But it's like, whatever they say is going to be, you know, I'm not fishing for certain answers to that question. So I think the fact that it's open-ended and there's no right answer, the person can't help but reveal themselves to you in some kind of way, right? And so you know, if they're not being authentic, it's just, I think it's hard to not be authentic when you get asked on the spot, what are your top three values? Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's a tough one to fake. But, you know, I think, so I think kind of designing questions that don't have right answers, you know, that, and you as an interviewer, you aren't looking for a specific answer. You're really just trying to get to know this human being that's sitting across the, you know, the table from you. Like, that's really how I think about the authenticity question. It's like, I just don't want it to be, I don't want to give this person any incentive or ability even to be inauthentic. And, you know, well, you know, like I said, well, I haven't always made the best hires so in the past. So hopefully kind of this new thing that I'm doing, which is like having these explicit conversations, will help. And, you know, so far I've been really pleased with the people that I'm surrounding myself with at TeachFX. And I think part of the reason why I've been happy is that we've had these explicit conversations about values. And I, like I said, I think it's just a hard thing to fake, you know? And even, you know, if you do fake it, it's like, okay, but what were your real, you know, if you try to fake three values, it's like, well, then what were your real ones? Well, are they really different? Right. I feel like the three values you say are kind of the things you value.
It's interesting. That's a good take from it. You know, why would we lie about what our three values are? If it is interesting. And if you have enough questions designed, like you said, that don't have the right answers, I think you'll be able to sift out and definitely get to an authentic point. That's great stuff. So again, listeners, rewind. This is interview gold.
Oh gosh.
It is. And it's really important. And what I want to pull out for the listeners too, I want to challenge you. So I'm going to slap you in the face, better leaders, but a lot of you don't have your mission, vision, values ironed out. I know they're on the wall. I know they're on the website. They might be in some type of handbook, but they're not real. They're not living and nobody cares about them. So I want to challenge you to really make a mission, vision, and value that is who you stand for. Because that explicit conversation that Jamie has with potential hires, when you're talking from a place of, like we were talking about in terms of the interviewee, authenticity. This is who we are. This is how we behave. Like, this is what you need to be to join. That's really important to do. Jamie, I had a huge light bulb moment too while you were talking. And it came when you were discussing the hiring slow. And maybe it'll be embarrassing. Maybe I'm the only principal that ever did this. But I started looking for hires when I knew that people were leaving, right?
Right.
Either I heard it through the grapevine or they handed me a letter, you know? And then I'm like, great, well, now I got to fill a position. Why the heck was I not interviewing all year round, even if I had a full staff and people never left?
Yeah.
Just totally. Because that would afford me, you know what I mean? To find the best candidates, to start that process slowly, and then going back to these, what I'm going to call micro projects or testing people out. Yes, we have these sample leadership, lessons, right, that teachers execute for you. You could give them all sorts of projects, especially if you're in no rush to hire, and just see if people, you know, one, will they complete it? And then the quality of how they complete it. And if they really want to come to that school, right, they're going to put in good work. And don't, you know, string people along if you're really not interested in them. Only have like top candidates doing this work. But that's how you sift through, I think, the good to the great. I wish I had this aha moment last year, but this is awesome. And I know it's definitely benefiting the listeners.
Yeah. And as long as you're open with these teachers you're talking to, like, hey, we don't have any openings right now, but you know, I'm really interested in you and I'd love for you to join our school eventually. If I was teaching and some other, you know, principal from another school reached out to me saying that, that's like awesome. Like, you know, there's nothing negative about that.
Absolutely.
From my perspective, you're not stringing me along, right? Like you've been totally transparent. So yeah, I mean, that's another funny thing about when I first started teaching is I was told I was going to teach math. And then like 4 days before the school year started, it was like, oh, can English. You actually also teach English as well? Just two sections of freshman English. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. Sure. Let me put together a year-long curriculum in the next 3 days before school starts. And I teach my first class ever to real live human beings, you know? So it was, I think the reality of the school leader's job is really hard and it's very hard to kind of get a jump on stuff. You know, you feel like, you know, oh my God, the idea of hiring through the windshield and not the rearview mirror. It's like, I got a backlog of a bunch of positions I need to fill. You know, it's tough to get a jump on that stuff. So these are all kind of like ideal things to work toward, I guess. But yeah, like I totally you know, it can be tough to have that kind of cadence, I can imagine, especially in a school environment.
School leadership is hard work. Why should funding student-centered programs be difficult too? If you're stressed about your budget and where you'll find some extra cash to run a great program for kids, I have a solution for you. Introducing the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas for 2018. In this guide, you will find the best school fundraising ideas available in 2018. My favorite company described in the guide is School Spirit Vending. School Spirit Vending brings hassle-free fundraising to schools through custom sticker vending machines installed in your school. The best part, you do absolutely no work. The School Spirit Vending team installs, maintains, and shares the revenue collected with the school. You can learn more about School Spirit Vending and the other magnificent companies mentioned in the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas for 2018 at schoolzonepodcast.com. Go there now, download the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas for 2018 at schoolzonepodcast.com. It's tough, and I know the reality. You know, I was in the work, but I'm not letting you off the hook, listeners. If this is important to you, you want to do it, schedule it. It doesn't have to be every day. Make it a once every other week or, you know, once every month. Any little bit moving forward on this type of thing and getting a jump on stuff is really going to, I think, benefit schools. So
this is another place where my theater work really is a parallel. They say that 90% of a theater director's job is casting, that if you cast the show right, like you're 90% of the way there. And I think that's true in business. And I think it's true in schools, like hiring, bringing the right people onto the team is kind of so important. I mean, I was the athletic director of the school that I taught at, and I coached three different sports. And, you know, we had a good soccer team my second year, you know, and one of the other coaches was like, man, how did you get the team to be, you know, so good? And I'm like, well, honestly, we had a freshman class that had five really good soccer players come in. And so we were a lot better. Like having better players on your team is a very fast way to have a better team. Like, you obviously, as a coach, you want to maximize those players' output. But yeah, you could argue that 90% of it is having the right people in the right roles from the outset. So yeah, worth investing time in that kind of stuff.
Well, Jamie, we're winding down. Let's do two just kind of fun questions and then a couple serious, more serious ones that end up.
Okay, sure.
But just curious, what do you do these days for fun?
Well, you know, I do a lot of, now, so I lived in New York for 10 years. Now I live in California. So a lot of hiking and camping recently. I love playing sports, you know, basketball, tennis. Just got into pickleball, which is pretty fun.
Pickleball? What is that?
Yeah. It's like this weird, like paddle tennis-y kind of thing. You play with a wiffle ball, you run around like crazy. It's a great workout. It's really nice because it kind of equalizes everyone's skill so that, you know, like the rallies are real long. It's fun. And then, you know, I love art and performance and music and stuff. So love going to galleries and kind of drinking deeply from that kind of stuff. Mm. But yeah, kind of all over the map. Eating is definitely another thing I love to do for fun. That's my fiance and I are big into eating delicious foods. But yeah.
Been so impressed by the cuisine in Antwerp. It's so good.
Oh yeah.
This question is completely for my wife. We have family in Brooklyn. She wants to be in New York.
Yeah.
I like California.
Oh, gosh. So so which is better? Which do I prefer? Is that the question?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's so hard. I mean, I think I'm a New Yorker, really. I grew up in Kansas City, but my fiance and I, we've been together for 10 years. We're actually getting married in 10 days.
Oh,
and
congrats.
We're getting married in Brooklyn. So that maybe answers your question. Like, we live in California now, but we decided to go back to, like, quote unquote, our city for the wedding. So I think I'm going to go with New York, with Brooklyn on that one. But I will say that, you know, if you got a family, that changes the calculation, I think, pretty significantly. And, you know, the nature out here is just so incredible that I think it's really a toss-up, the real answer.
Gotcha. That's awesome. Well, I don't know, I appreciate it. No, I heard you say New York, so that was cool. And a shout out to my cousin Io. He owns Brooklyn Kettle. So if you need a cup of Joe pre-wedding or afterwards, check that out. Brooklyn Kettle.
All right. We'll do it.
Jamie, if you could be automatically good at something, what would it be?
Interesting. I mean, how good are we talking? Like best in the world good?
Sure.
Then I'd pick like, you know, basketball or tennis, somewhere where I could just make millions of dollars, you know, working a short period of time. And then I could use that money to like, you know, go make the world a better place. And it would be super fun to do that. But I mean, you know, that's like if you could automatically make yourself best in the world at something. Yeah. It'd be hard to turn down, like, you know, getting to beat LeBron James in the finals, like my man Steph Curry gets to do.
That's right. And one book every principal should read right now and why?
I think I would go with Emile Durkheim's The Elementary Forms of Religious Life. I was a religious studies major in undergrad, and that book, it's kind of like one of the big parts of it is like how ritual binds communities together. And Durkheim takes this kind of functionalist definition of like what a quote unquote a religion is. And I think it really applies to any community that you're trying to build. And I never really appreciated how important ritual is to building community until reading this book. And kind of, I just think it's genius. I mean, I think anybody who's leading any type of organization where you want to have like a culture that like people feel bound to that culture and that and to each other, I'd say it's a really good one. I mean, the other one that I love is Martin Buber's I and Thou. It's all about dialogue. It's kind of, I'm now working on this app, TeachFX, that's all about dialogue and analyzing dialogue. You know, Buber is the philosopher of dialogue. And I think that's probably my favorite book. Is it perfect for the principal, you know, as opposed to just any human being? Like, I think it really applies to anybody. But, you know, I think with education, it's so important to like relate to people on a really human level, to really encounter the other that you're with. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of spitballing, but those are two that jumped to my mind immediately.
And both were recommended for the first time here on episode 142. It's really good. So last two questions. What message would you put on all school marquees across the globe for just a day if you could?
You know, I feel like anything that you'd put on a school marquee that could fit on a marquee would just be like, it would sound too cheesy to really have the impact that you'd want. You know, like students, you are the future. Like that, like, I don't know. I mean, I feel like I'd probably want to put some kind of like URL to something crazy that really, I don't know. I mean, that's too hard. If we had the answer to that, you know, I'd be like a marketing genius that could, you know, change the world with like a quick phrase. You know, I can't. That's too hard. That one's too hard.
Okay. You're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by your budget or resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school and what would be your top three priorities?
This is something that actually my fiance and I plan to do one day, which is to start a school. She's working on it more than I am right now because I just started a company. But we have this idea to do a school where the students run businesses as a part of their curriculum. And so that they run real businesses and like, you know, mom and pop kind of businesses, you know, that can be an income stream for the school to, you know, have an extra income stream. And my fiance and I both, like, we met teaching in Harlem. Like, we're all about, you know, serving the underserved. That's kind of our whole, you know, big part of our work and our mission in life. But, you know, I really believe that this country needs integrated schooling and that's key to bridging a lot of the divides that are in our country right now. And so, yeah, my big vision and our big vision is to have like an integrated school. So bringing together different races, different classes, and having this entrepreneurial lens through which to look at education where, you know, the kids are, you know, this is like thinking high school. That's kind of where I taught. So, you know, where the kids are actually running these businesses. And that kind of comes from my own experience. I started a company when I was really young, like a web design development company when I was like 12 years old. And like, I think working on that has, you know, prepped me well for like the quote unquote real world. And a lot of the lessons I learned super early in life, like, it just really, really helped me along my journey. And so I'd love to support young people to be able to do that and kind of make those connections from like school to what life is like. And another nice thing about having kids start companies is, you know, that can be a revenue stream for the school so that you can serve low-income kids and still kind of bring top-flight resources to them.
Well, Jamie, thanks so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
No advice. I feel like I'm too young and to really be imparting advice, but I'd say that, yeah, the best way to get a hold of me is jamie@teachfx.com. And I love talking to educators, especially if people have like ideas or feedback or complaints or anything about what I'm trying to do. Like, I want to hear from educators out there. I find the conversation so energizing and exciting. So yeah, definitely hit me up, Jamie@TeachFX, JAMIE@TeachFX.com.
And Better Leaders, thanks for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember, life's 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Jamie. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com. Type Jamie in the search bar. The show notes page will pop up. You'll get highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. Jamie, thanks again for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thank you.
Better leaders, just a few more things before you take off. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show. This helps gives the show some social proof, aka iTunes juice, and encourages new people to listen to the show. If you are a social media junkie, share your biggest takeaway from the show, and feel free to tag me on Twitter or Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer. Take the letters, switch them around, and create something interesting and new. That's how I got it. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Do you want to get a short email from me every Sunday where I share the best resources I have come across, links to interesting articles, books, blogs, and podcasts that have challenged my thinking, and a quote that's inspired me and will inspire you as well? If you'd like access to this resource, head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and join the newsletter at the top of the page. Over 1,000 school leaders subscribe, and I think you'll benefit from it too. In the newsletter, I also share when a new blog or podcast comes out, as well as different opportunities to work with me. Thanks again for listening to the show.